Powerful computer models that predict flooding still need to be tested on the ground. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech, demystifying the digital economy. I'm Molly Wood. Residents of Charleston, South Carolina, hunkered down earlier this month when Hurricane Dorian struck the East Coast. This time, Dorian didn't hit too hard. But this low-lying coastal city has been seeing a lot more flooding lately. Homeowners and residents could really benefit from better flood maps. The tech to create those maps exists, but not enough people have the information. Reporter Tegan Wendland visited South Carolina before Dorian to see firsthand how this technology might help people adapt to a changing climate.
It's dusk in Charleston. Sheree Lewis Gruss slides on waders and sloshes into a deep puddle on the side of the road.
Let's move in.
She's a cartographer, usually in front of a computer, but tonight she uses a yardstick and a tablet for her work, improving flood maps. To her left, marsh grass and the sea. To her right, the city's stately colonial mansions.
Ooh, it feels really squishy at the bottom over here. It feels like some sediment is being pushed up from the water.
Lewis Gruss flew in from New York just to measure these puddles because she knew there'd be a king tide tonight, one of the highest tides of the year. The whole bay is rising. Water fills the neighborhood.
So in this spot, I'm sticking my ruler in right next to the storm drain opening, and it's already at 11 centimeters.
About 4 inches. The water rises through the evening, up to 3 feet in some spots. Small fish swim through the street. Neighbors keep watch from their porches. Lewis Gruss moves from block to block, entering data.
It feels shocking to me to see streets completely inundated with water on a day where there's no rain and no major tidal surge from a hurricane. It's just, you know, your everyday high tide flooding.
Every day, but worse because of sea level rise. Lewis Gruss works for First Street Foundation. It's on a mission to update flood maps with the real flood risk of every home in America. It merges federal flood data with local zoning maps and high-tech LIDAR images. Lewis Gruss ran a computer model that predicted this flooding. And unfortunately, tonight, her predictions are right.
It's a good feeling for us, but it really makes me sad for places like this that have to experience this type of flooding so frequently.
Could I talk to you for a sec?
Nervous, frustrated, surprised, that's how Christina McClure feels as she stands in her yard watching the water rise. The local jewelry maker and her husband saved up for years for this cute little white cottage.
I mean, I know Charleston floods a little bit, but not like this.
Now she's saving again to lift the house 6 feet off the ground. But it hasn't been easy to figure out whether to make this investment or if it'll even be enough to protect them from future floods.
It's hard to find, to tease out what's really going on. That's what's frustrating.
Hard to know what's an anomaly and what's normal. The Federal Emergency Management Agency tracks flooding and dictates who needs flood insurance. But FEMA's official flood maps use backward-looking data, not future projections.
What's the risk going to be in 10, 20, 50 years down the road? And the maps don't tell you that at all.
Carolyn Kuski is director of the Risk Center at Wharton University. The maps don't factor in climate change, and they don't include millions of homes that have never been mapped for flood risk. That's a problem for homeowners.
What they see in their communities might be different from what's on the map. And so what I hear a lot of is actually distrust of the maps from FEMA.
FEMA updates its maps every 3 to 5 years. The Federal Advisory Council has pushed FEMA to map more frequently and take climate change into account. FEMA officials say they're making their data more open, and they welcome projects like First Street. Meanwhile, more companies and nonprofits are picking up the slack. First Street works with several universities and has a new tool called Flood IQ, where anyone can look up their property. Homeowners like the McClures in Charleston can see their risk under different scenarios, from a Category 3 hurricane to the highest tide of the year.
Until every person can fully understand their past, present, and future risk to flooding, they will continue to be hurt by flood events.
That's why Lewis Gruss goes out there in waders, to make the tool as good as it can be. But the thing is, FEMA maps are the law of the land. Even though they're not the best predictor of future flooding, they determine official flood zones, who gets flood insurance, and who can build what, where.
That's Tegan Wendland reporting from Charleston, South Carolina. This story was produced with support from The Water Main, an initiative of American Public Media. And you can find our whole climate tech series, How We Survive, at marketplace.org/climate. And now for some related links. We have talked quite a bit about venture capital investment in climate-related technology, mostly about it being smaller than we might like. But I happened to find a story from Australia from earlier this week about a company called FloodMap, with two P's, that just raised $1.3 million in VC funding to extend its machine learning-based flood prediction technology across Australia and also into parts of the U.S. that are at risk from hurricane flooding, like, well, Charleston, South Carolina. You can read more about that at our website, marketplacetech.org. And with that in mind, I got a lot of feedback about our venture capital stories from VCs who are working on green tech investing, including Brooke Porter from G2VP, who we interviewed for one of our pieces earlier this month. And the message from a lot of them was that there are success stories, VC-backed companies that can have a big impact on mitigating climate change and helping us adapt. And I thought it was fair to share that point. Brooke Porter and others pointed out Beyond Meat and its huge IPO, which shows the potential for a market for meat replacement. Proterra, the electric bus company that could replace school and municipal buses across the country someday. And even Tesla, which, yes, benefited from tax credits on electric cars, but was a venture-backed company that did move the industry forward. Porter said, quote, "When you add up the big successes, they way more than offset all the, quote, failures. These are from categories that most of Silicon Valley has written off. This is the whole strategy behind venture capital. Take big bets on large markets, and the winners will outweigh the losses by a long shot." He went on to say, "Telling them Silicon Valley is ignoring the problem, other than a few rogue venture firms, doesn't really tell the whole story, even if it's mostly true. Investors are lemmings, and when others hear that something is working in an area where most are ignoring, it's very likely to drive capital in that direction." End of quote. And here's where we are ultimately saying the same thing. Porter said the world needs 10 to 100 times more capital focused on climate-related technologies in order to really start addressing the problem. Yes, we agree. I'm Molly Wood, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
"What is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?"
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.